This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This is Matt Card Collection. You're listening to the Sports Card Strategy Show, part of the No Off-Season Sports Card Network. Number one place for advice on how to make money flipping sports cards. Thanks for tuning in. Remember, there's no off-season.
This is Mark Aaron from WSB Radio in Atlanta, and you're listening to the Sports Card Strategy Show, part of the NoOffSeason.com Sports Card Network, the number one place for advice on how to make money flipping sports cards. Thanks for tuning in, and remember, there is no off-season.
What's up, everybody? I'm Paul Hickey with NoOffSeason.com. This is the Sports Card Strategy Show. Don't forget to get a free 30-day trial at NoOffSeason.com today to help you make money flipping sports cards, build your sports card investment portfolio, get unlimited advice from our experts, and take sports card school to navigate the hobby. That's NoOffSeason.com. Get your free 30-day trial today. All the data we use on the Sports Card Strategy Show is from MarketMoversApp.com. Use code NOOFFSEASON at MarketMoversApp.com to get 20% off for life after a free 14-day trial. All right, let's get to the Sports Card Strategy.
Happy Wednesday, and welcome back to the Sports Card Strategy Show. Connor Barnett here alongside Paul Hickey of NoOffSeason.com. Pumped to be back for another episode, Paul. How are we doing this morning?
So pumped. There's so much to talk about. Jackson Holiday, sell alert, Masters Wednesday, big news from PSA and eBay. I'm ready to get into it, man.
Let's do it. I am excited. This is one of my favorite weekends of the year with the Masters in close sight for us. Today's going to be the par three competition, one of my favorites. But I'm excited for today in general. We got hobby news to share with everyone, Paul. Why should we care about it? Obviously, you just mentioned Jackson Holiday. Sell alerts on the way. He has been called up. We're going to talk about Jackson Holiday, where his market's at, how to move him, what it means for us. Masters weekends, is it still relevant to us in terms of flipping cards? What cards are relevant? Which players are relevant? And then we're going to round off the show with the top five graded cards that you can buy and flip to make profits. Excited there. It's kind of a new format that we're rolling out based off the formula that Paul cooked up in the back at the lab. We got some interesting stuff to talk about there today as well. So stay tuned for our top five cards to buy, graded, and flip. But Paul, I'm going to go ahead and toss things over to you for some live chat love before we roll into the show.
Live chat love, Rusty Yamagart in the house, NoOffSeason.com fam, Jackson Holiday Day, Shane Graham, Hoosier Card Guy, Rocky Empire Sports Cards, Mountain Lake Cards and Games. I'll say happy Wednesday, happy Masters Week. Remember to drop your L's and dubs in the live chat, and we're going to continue to shout you out throughout the show and at the end of the show. Everybody, if you want your questions answered, though, we're trying a little something new here. We want you to visit nooffseason.com/ask or drop a super chat. If you like the content we're putting out on a daily, weekly basis, be sure to like, comment, and subscribe at youtube.com/PaulHickey. And of course, join the Discord at sportscardstrategy.com to participate in the ongoing conversation. Connor Barnett, head of content at nooffseason.com. Excited to have you on the show today. You've got a nice question of the day. What do you got for the people?
Yeah, so I mean, based off the formula that we're rolling with right now, what's exciting about it is that it's going to give us opportunities of cards that you can buy raw and grade and get an understanding of how much upside is there relative to risk and how much you need to invest to get the profits that you want. That's really what we love, is that we know exactly where we can get based on data. But it also gives us good opportunities to find pre-graded prints that we can make money on, which is why I'm excited to get into that top five today. But the question of the day is, do you prefer to buy raw or pre-graded prints? You know, Paul, we always try to do a good job giving opportunities for our listeners to make money for different types of flippers in the audience. But we want to know how you like to flip your cards. Do you buy pre-graded to avoid the hassles that come along with grading and sell to make profits during sell markers? Or do you prefer to buy raw and build up those 20 card submissions to increase the value of your sports cards in that fashion? Paul, what's your go-to if you had to pick one? I know that you kind of dabble in both sides. What would you roll with here?
Well, it's interesting question because we've done a lot of analysis in the lab, you and I, this week on this very topic. I prefer to buy raw and grade. I'm just going to come out and say it. You know, the premium is on the PSA 10. So if I see a PSA 10 on the secondary market that I believe is a good deal that I can make money on at a selling marker, AKA go where they ain't, buy with a selling marker in mind and buy the right card for the right player at the right time, then I think buy that PSA 10. Buy that Fokker. Like, I just bought a Carson Beck PSA 10 Bowman Chrome First Auto Refractor out of $499. Got it for maybe like $250 or less. It was under $250. I don't remember the exact price. And so when you're doing that, you're prospecting that Beck has a selling marker of, you know, September 2024 at the start of the college season. That's a good example of when I would feel comfortable just going ahead and buying a PSA 10. I feel like, though, where you really can maximize your returns is when you have the ability to identify a raw card and have the patience to grade it. So that's my preference. But, you know, certainly it's a great question because there's a lot of opportunity out there for both. And I certainly do both. And I would hope that everybody in the audience has done both or will try both in the future just so that they can kind of develop their own comfort zone. But yeah, I would love to know from everybody out there to comment at youtube.com/Paul Hickey or on our pin post on IG at Sports Card Strategy. What do you prefer? You know, just pick one. Don't hedge. I picked one. Connor, what's your pick?
I think that our pick is going to be, my pick in general is going to be evolving with the way that we're rolling with the formula, because, and that's why today's episode is so exciting. I think a lot of our listeners have heard us say the same things, invest in the same kind of players, and we have opportunities that we're finding from the data that it's giving us to kind of move in different directions. So I think as we dive deeper into the formula, I'm going to get a better indication of in what scenarios buying raw and grading to make profits versus just buying pre-graded prints gives you more upside for different players. So I hate to be sitting in the middle here, Paul, but I think if I had to lean one way right now, just based on the data that we're seeing, buying raw, it just has so much upside to getting those graded if you can get those good returns. So I think that's going to be my answer. But guys, we do want to know, do you prefer to buy raw or pre-graded prints? Like Paul said, comment at youtube.com/Paul Hickey or on the pinned post on IG at Sports Card Strategy. All right, Paul, let's roll right into the first segment. Why should we care? This is a segment where we're letting you guys know why you should care, the audience. And today's Why Should We Care is focused on news surrounding PSA. The headline reads, eBay and collectors enter into commercial agreement and sign deals for acquisition of Golden by eBay and acquisition of eBay Vault by PSA. I think that's the big thing there, Paul. Basically, eBay Vault has been sold to PSA. Paul, what does this mean for us? Is there any more additional info within this news release that we need to take into consideration? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, when I first read this news this morning, I thought, who cares that eBay acquired Golden Auctions from PSA? That seems a little weird. And then I kept reading and I was like, oh, wait a minute. They're like trading Golden Auctions for the eBay vault. I think PSA got the better of this trade. So PSA acquires the eBay vault. And the reason why we should care, and again, and I like the way you framed it, Connor, why should we care? Because I think a lot of hobby news out there, the listeners of the Sports Card Strategy Show shouldn't really care that much about. There's a lot of hobby news that it's hobby news. Like, it's fodder. Like, And that's great. We all love the hobby, and I understand why people partake in just general hobby news. But I think as it relates to our audience who really cares about making money flipping sports cards, this particular hobby news is big. It's big. And so the particular part, you're absolutely right, that we should care about here is the fact that PSA, Collectors Universe, but PSA acquires the eBay vault. This is huge. The reason why this is huge is because it will have an immediate impact on our ability to maneuver and make plays. And so when you dig into this further, basically what they're saying in this announcement is that PSA vault users and grading submitters will be able to list cards directly on eBay. The eBay vault is being acquired by PSA and vaulted items will head to the PSA vault. Golden joins eBay, where high-value collectibles can tap into a larger network of buyers. So let's table that, because that's actually pretty big when you read it that way. But what I want to talk about real quick is the acquisition of the eBay vault by PSA. The reason why this is huge is because previous to this, you had two different vault services. The vault service of the collector's vault was one where you could get your cards graded at PSA, and then you had the option to either ship them back to you or send them directly to the collector's vault, the PSA vault. And I tried this, and the pro to it was that, you know, you didn't have to pay shipping for, you know, it's like $75 minimum shipping to ship your FedEx package back. It just went directly into your collector's vault. You get your online account, log in at psacard.com, and you see your vault and you see your cards. And that's cool. That's a good experience. It's also less risky to ship the cards because, as I've talked to a lot of people about in our nooffseason.com fam, like Mosaic Joe, Farmer Joe, and we're talking at the Nashville Card Show a couple months ago about how inevitably we have so many PSA submissions that we're going to be out of town for when one comes back. And then there's like high anxiety because you've got like potentially five figures worth of cards sitting, you know, in limbo with the FedEx person. And you have to sign for that delivery. So it can raise anxiety level. If you miss it three times, they actually will send it back. So Joe and I were talking about that, you know, high leveling of anxiety, sometimes with the shipping. So to be able to just have a card go to PSA and then immediately go into a vault is nice. However, the cons of the PSA vault were pretty big. There's fees involved to get the cards out. B, you can't necessarily ship this vault. You either had to sell it on Golden Auctions or on the PSA marketplace, collector's marketplace, which does not have the eyeballs that eBay has. And then, or you had to ship it back to yourself and then ship it out again to the buyer. And so you had to pay kind of double shipping and you're taking up more time. So that could hurt your eBay rating or whatever marketplace that you're selling on, right? So that was a big enough cons for me to not ever use the collector's vault, the PSA vault, ever again. Then you take a look at the eBay vault, which I've talked a lot about on the Sports Card Strategy Show. The eBay vault has been better because even though there's limitations on what cards can go into the eBay vault, it has to be graded by a particular grading companies, which is interesting. We should talk about that in a second. But the eBay vault has like, you know, five grading companies that they would accept. It has to be over $250 in value. So you can't submit raw cards to the eBay vault. You can't buy raw cards on eBay and send them to your eBay vault. Only a certain amount of cards that meet those criteria could you buy on eBay and have them go into your eBay vault. So you had this separation where the pros of the eBay vault were more than the pros of the PSA vault, because when you met those criteria, you could immediately acquire the card. We talked about this with my Jackson Churio PSA 10 auto Bowman Chrome first a few weeks ago. I said a play was that I could just buy it even though we sent out a sell alert, because I can immediately acquire the card and then list it. And so different things like that on the eBay vault, where you buy on eBay all the time so it can go into your vault. You don't have to worry about it. And then in one click, you know you want to sell on eBay. So in one click, you can create a listing, which is such a time saver. You can even be on the run. You don't have to put anything in your eBay drafts manually. You can be on the run and be like, wait a minute, this is in my eBay vault. Boom, listed, right? You can be out with your family. You can be taking a dump. You can be on the golf course. You can be whatever, you know, on family vacation at the airport, whatever. So I liked the eBay vault more than the collector's vault. Now, conceivably, and I don't know if exactly this is what's going to happen, but in my head now is a situation where you've got Nat Turner, the CEO of PSA, and you've got Jamie Iommi, the CEO of eBay, saying things in this press release that lead me to believe that what they're trying to do eventually is bring all of those things together to where you can submit a card to PSA, PSA can grade it, it will go into your now combined eBay PSA vault, and it will have, if it has the same features combined of each vault, now you could then list the card on eBay from your PSA eBay vault. If you can do that, then they have basically made the sports card flipping world an infinitely better place, because now you're going to be able to take the pros and cons of each vault, eliminate a bunch of the cons, and now you're going to have the situation where it can be that a lot of times CEOs in a merger, in a press release, will say, this is now going to be a seamless experience, and it's a bunch of bullshit. This could potentially be real seamless experience if they do it the right way. Because again, grade cards, submit them to PSA. When you complete the order submission form, it says, do you want to send these? Do you want these to be returned back to you, or do you want them in the now PSA eBay vault? Now you check that option. They all go into the vault, so they all meet the criteria, conceivably. Now, Connor, I'm a guy, I don't like stuff laying around my house. A lot of people like to touch and feel the cards. They like to fondle the cardboard, if you will. Shout out Mike Lacusta of Fondling Cardboard. That's fine. More power to you. Personally, I would love it if every time I had a grading submission to PSA, I could ship the ones that I want back to myself, like the lower dollar ones, the ones that maybe I want to sell at a card show. You know, that's the other thing. Maybe I want to sell some of these at a card show. Maybe it got a PSA 8 and I thought it was a 10. And now I want to give it away to somebody, right? I want to give it away to somebody in the nooffseason.com fam. Or I want to just sell it on eBay with a 99 cents and let it ride auction. And maybe you're not going to be able to do that in this new vault, this new PSA eBay vault. But right now, as it stands today, in your PSAcard.com account, you can select card by card which ones you want shipped back to you and which ones you want shipped to the PSA vault. So if they make it where you can either ship your entire order or you can select card by card which ones you want shipped back to you and which ones you want in the vault, and then you can list them on eBay. And now that eBay owns Golden Auctions, you can list them on either Golden or eBay. Then these two CEOs and these two teams, executive teams, whoever participated in this deal, have done something amazing for the hobby. Now, one more thing before we kind of hand it over for some questions or some thoughts. As an eBay vault user, an avid eBay vault user, and I have a PSA vault account too. So I'm gonna dig in further and see when my eBay vaulted cards actually digitally transition over into my PSA vault and what that, you know, stay tuned in future Sports Card Strategy Show episodes for that. But for today, the day that we actually got the breaking news, this is the email that I got from eBay as an eBay vault user. Thank you for being a valued eBay customer and eBay vault holder. We are writing to share an exciting update about the eBay vault. Today we announced we have entered into a three-part transaction and partnership with Collectors, that's PSA, an industry leader in sports and collectible card grading and authentication, to bring a more seamless and powerful experience to the collector community. The transactions include the sale of the eBay vault to PSA, which will enable unrivaled customer journey across buying, grading, selling, and storage. eBay will be integrated into PSA's new vault experience, unlocking new benefits to customers like listing at the time of grading and easy selling on eBay via consignment through PSA. For now, the vault will run as is with no changes to our fee structure or processes. At close of this merger, right? Once PSA has become owner, your collection information will be shared with PSA. Later this year, PSA will launch a new vault experience, at which point their rate card will apply. You'll receive advance notice of all these changes and have the option of withdrawing in-vault items at no cost, should you wish to do so, until the launch of PSA. This is perfect. This is perfect because basically, Connor, what this is, and everybody listening, is I'm just going to break it down right now. I've got like 20 cards in my eBay vault, right? I've got zero cards in my PSA vault, which should align with what I just said on the pros and cons of each of those. Now, I get the option to either say, yes, I want all of these 20 cards to just go over into my PSA vault. And oh, by the way, I can still list them on eBay whenever I want. Or screw this, I want all my cards back, or I want these cards back, but send these over to the PSA vault. That's perfect. That's perfect. At no cost. No one should have a problem with this. As long as these two companies actually consummate the transaction and then build the digital experience that they're talking about, this is beautiful. Because basically what's going to happen, like I said earlier, is you're going to be able to submit your cards for grading at PSA, the number one, and yes, CGC Cards is a sponsor of our show. PSA is the number one grading company in the world in terms of what we will recommend that you, who you grade with for the maximum value on the secondary market until further notice. So you can submit your cards to PSA. Then you can have the option to list when you get the reveal through the eBay vault, if you're sending them to the eBay vault. I mean, this is brilliant. Connor, what do you think?
First, I want to give a shout out to Eric B in the live chat because he's kind of riding the wave alongside you during there. Sounded like he was locked in. Appreciate the comments out of Eric B. Yeah, I mean, Paul, I always like to think big picture. So a fantastic job by you, the sharing information and the facts and what it means for us. My thought big picture is that if this service is as seamless, and it was hilarious that you arbitrarily used the word and then they had the word in the release that they sent you. If this is as seamless as it comes out and this is as functional as they're going to make it be for flippers, I can't imagine a scenario where this doesn't have a pretty substantial increase in the fanboys and the love that PSA gets in terms of name recognition as a brand. And I'm wondering, and I've asked a similar question before, but I'm wondering if this is as seamless as and functional for sports card flippers and everyone starts doing this, you've got to think that PSA's market value for prints becomes more expensive just due to the demand of how many people want to be involved with PSA and are buying PSA and want to be locked in with PSA cards because of how seamless and easy the process can be, right? So is there a possibility that these changes, this merger, if you will, could have an effect on overall PSA prices down the line if everyone wants to start doing this, the flip sports cards?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is probably, to your point, just the beginning of a lot of a domino effect where each of these two companies can just make it easier, whether it's from a price standpoint, less friction, or whether it's from a experience standpoint, less friction. I mean, there's been a lot of friction, and friction's another buzzword, right? Like, you know, but seamless friction, all that stuff. But it's true. Like there's been a lot of like siloing in the hobby where it's like, why do you have to do this one thing over here and then do this other thing over there? And like Fanatics, when they acquired the licensing a few years ago to the three major sports, MLB, NBA, NFL, you know, they came in and they said, we want to build a seamless experience. And, you know, TBD on that. I mean, really, this announcement, I mean, and Nat Turner, when he took collectors in PSA from being a public company, he basically bought up all the shares and made it private. And he's the majority owner. He did that around, you know, around the same time in 2021. And he said, we're going to create a seamless experience. Props to Nat Turner. I'm not the biggest fan of the guy, just from like a personality standpoint, from what I've seen on his interviews and stuff. But I mean, props to Nat Turner. Like he's doing it, man. Like good for you, Nat Turner. Like, I'm a fan. I'm a fan of this move. I think whether it lowers the prices just due to the less friction on the less overhead cost, or whether it just makes the experience better and the prices stay the same, I'm a fan of this entire thing. I think that because all of these things are going to happen, we will, as flippers, we will have less cost. Like, we will have less cost because we will have to ship less cards. And that will add up. You know, I mean, Rusty Imigard in the live chat saying something funny like, you know, five figures in cards. The grind that's ahead is real, LOL. Yeah, man, like, that adds up. Like, SHIT adds up, boys and girls. Like, it adds up. Like, you know, I mean, $75 shipping when you make 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 submissions to PSA every month. $75 shipping to get it back, $35 shipping to get it there. I mean, all this stuff adds up. So it's like, collectors can increase the price of the membership by $30 a year, right? We talked about that a few weeks ago. And then they can give us something like this and then lower the bulk value grading submission from $19.99 a card to $16.99 a card. And we're winning. We're winning. You do the math, you know. I mean, more recurring revenue for Nat. Love that move. But he's giving back more value, you know. So I think this is huge. And just real quick, like, you know, we got a couple things in the live chat real quick. I want to say hello to the sports card professor. He's a big supporter of the show, and he's a great person for the hobby because he consumes a lot of content from friends of ours who are content creators in the hobby, Jeremy Lee, Mike Lacusta. I mean, Iowa Dave. I think the sports card professor supports all of us, and we appreciate that support, professor. But he says the eBay vault's in Delaware. Where is the PSA vault? So I want to just like say this real quick. I don't have any inside information on this, but Connor, I have to imagine that there's no way that they're going to actually physically change the location of people's cards with this, right? Like, it's going to be a situation where like all of my cards that are in the eBay vault, wherever that exists in the world, are going to stay in the same location, even if digitally the experience is with collectors and PSA after this transition happens. And what they're going to do logistically is like anything that's graded in the future or anything that I buy in the future is going to go to the other vault, the PSA collector's vault. And as I liquidate things out of the previous vault, they're just going to ship to wherever I liquidate them to physically. But they're not going to do anything where it's like, oh, we've got all these cards in all the in the eBay vault and we're going to ship them over. They're just not going to do that. They're just going to digitally, they're going to appear in a different spot. So I think like if anyone's out there worried, I say that because I think if you're worried about the status of your actual physical cards with this, I don't think you need to worry. I don't think that they would do that. I think that they would keep them in the eBay vault, but it would appear digitally and then there'd be another team responsible for, you know, shipping those out, but there'd be court, you know, they're not merging, but they're partnering and they're like, it's like they're trading. They're not trading assets. I made like an analogy to the sports card market a second ago where you would trade, but like they're not trading. They're acquiring different assets from each other. I haven't seen anything like this. I think it's freaking sweet. You know, Fanatics bought PWCC like a year ago. They haven't done shit. Like they haven't really made that better at all. This could be better, and I'm excited about it. You could tell, Connor, we don't have any affiliation with either of these companies from a partnership or sponsorship standpoint. I'm just fired up as a hobbyist.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Yeah. And Paul, you being someone that likes to save time, I think that's part of the reason you're so fired up here. It's going to save you time, energy, efficiency. And create efficiency. And exactly, efficiency in flipping sports cards. So I think this news is a big dub for all of us. Hopefully it is a seamless indeed transition. I'm excited to see the pros that come forward for the sports card flippers. But we've got other big news, Paul. We got to hop right on into it. And it is Jackson Holliday, someone that has been near atop our rankings list, whether it was the baseball rankings or the consolidated rankings at nooffseason.com. Premium members can get full access to those rankings. If you're not a premium member, go sign up for a free 30-day trial at nooffseason.com. But yeah, we got the news that Jackson Holliday has been called up. Everyone's been holding him for a while. We've been pitching him for a long time. The news is here after he didn't make the team out of camp and then came straight into AAA and started absolutely raking. Obviously, this is an early call. Excited to see how he does, but we're not really waiting to see how he does, Paul. Obviously, the sell marker for us was and always is going to be that call-up, right? So he's 20 years old, top pick in 2022 at Major League Baseball draft. Obviously, excelled in spring training, like I mentioned, was sent to the minor leagues to start the season. In the first 10 games of this year in the minors, he hit .333 with two home runs, nine RBIs, five doubles. It took just 12 walks in comparison to only eight strikeouts. I mean, this is huge, Paul. We're excited. His entire market is already up 11.9% over the last 14 days. That's 164 cards totaling 1,400 different sales. Let's talk selling strategies, Paul, because there's a couple different ways that you can do this, and I don't think Blake's statement is the way to go. I'm going to give my thoughts, and then I'll let you roll into it, Paul. High-end cards, Paul, I'm assuming we probably want to go buy it now or best offers here. The Orioles do play the Red Sox tonight and tomorrow, and then they have another series starting on Friday against the Brewers. So we talk about auctions and buy it nows. I'm thinking high-end cards, probably buy it nows on the night at a comfortable price point, probably on the night of the first game, Paul. And then if it's not a high-end card, probably an auction. But I'm curious to see when you would think the auction should be ending because they're kind of mid-series right now, and then we'll have a slight break before the next series comes. I'm very curious to see how you're trying to sell these Jackson Holliday cards.
Yeah, I think you nailed it with the high end. And more than anything, you nailed it with the no blanket statements here. I mean, selling is an art form, and it's harder to sell a card than it is to buy a card. It's a fun challenge to buy a card at a snipe price. You know, we've got snipe prices at nooffseason.com. For those of you coming in new to the Sports Card Strategy Show, our process is to help you find cards at a buy-in point when an athlete is out of the news cycle and their card prices are likely down because of that, or they're at least not spiking because of that, and so they have upside in the future at a sell marker. That's it in a nutshell. And the sell marker is hard to pinpoint exactly what to do and how to sell a card. So what we do is we send out sell alerts. If you text sports cards to 1-833-992-5727, you sign up for those sell alerts. And the reason they're helpful is because Connor writes like 99% of them. And the way that he writes them is exactly how he just described it a minute ago, which is he goes through probably at least 5 to 10 cards for the player. And he breaks down the data and how you should potentially list the cards. And so because Jackson Holliday is such a big name, we've talked about him for the last year at least as a buy. And I'd say in early March, we took him off the list as a buy. We thought he was going to make the Orioles out of camp, out of spring training. He was sent down to AAA. Then he became a buy again, and now he's a sell. So Connor's posting the sell alert to nooffseason.com. For premium members, you're going to get all that information in that sell alert. If you're signed up, by texting sports cards to 1-833-992-5727, you'll all get a text alert that will link you into that article. A free 30-day trial at nooffseason.com will give you access to that article. If you want to see like what Jackson Holliday card do I have? But I'm going to tell you, I'll break it down here on the show. So I think you're right, Connor. I think we have some one-on-one strategist package members that have like, that you know, that have bought into Jackson Holliday cards at the $2,000, $3,000 per card level. We check the sales data of those cards, and we do exactly what you just said, which is, okay, this card that you bought for $2,500 actually just sold for like $5,000, so that's good news. But now it's a situation where, while on paper, we want to pat ourselves on the back, we actually have to execute that sale, right? And so to do that, we think that for a card of that magnitude, an auction is super risky because you could get crushed for any number of reasons that could be out of your control. We love eBay for auctioning off cards, pitting people up against each other at sell alerts. That's how you can maximize the returns 9 times out of 10. But that 1 time out of 10 where it's really risky is when you have so much invested in one card and you could get crushed. You know, 10% all of a sudden becomes a significant amount of money versus 10% on like a $50 card, for example. So for those, It's important to list in buy it now or best offers, like Connor just said, at or around the most recent sale price, as long as that's a profit for you. If it's not that's the other side of it that we don't know without talking to each individual person, is we don't know exactly what you have paid for a card. So that's why blanket statements are dangerous. But if it is a profit for you to sell in a buy it now or best offer with the buy it now price around the most recent comp, then you're winning. You should sell that card. You should liquidate that card easily in that format. Where you have bought in higher than the most recent comp and you list in a buy it now or best offer, regardless of the buy-in price, now we're not even talking about five-figure cards anymore. We're really talking about any card. Your risk now becomes not moving that card. So the way that I would go down a level is I would say, like, if you're in the high three figures on a card, you know, if you're $500 or above into a card and the most recent comp at a sell alert doesn't put you in a situation where you can profit at a buy it now or best offer, you probably want to go up, you know, you probably want to go up like 30% from where you bought in at and the buy it now, and then just kind of cross your fingers that player has some kind of a performance spike to drive someone to snatch that card at a buy it now or best offer. Now, if you're around $500 or less into a card, that's where I think you're in a situation where you should just go ahead and list that sucker in a 7 or 10 day auction. The reason I default to a 10 day auction is because the world is finicky with how people make their purchasing decisions. So it's important to list at around 7 or 8 p.m. or schedule an auction to start at around 7 or 8 p.m. because then it'll end at around 7 or 8 p.m. Those are going to be the times Eastern time, right? That's going to ensure that throughout the United States, you're ending an auction at a time when people are awake. They might be done with dinner. They might be relaxing. They're done with work. And they're ready to feel good about making a purchasing decision at the end of an auction to bid. And if you can get, you know, 3 to 4 bids on an auction, the reason why it's important to list right when we send out a sell alert is because that's when we feel like it's in the news cycle to the point where you can get 3 to 4 bids at the beginning of an auction. So it's important to get from a art form auction listing strategy, it's important to actually try to get 2 or 3 bids at the beginning of an auction and then have it end at a time when you would get maybe 10 to 11 additional bids in the final like 5 minutes of the auction. Now, depending on the supply and demand of the card, it may not work. Like we saw Jackson Cheerios Bowman Chrome First PSA 10 from 2022 sell really well from a sales volume standpoint. It was easy to liquidate when we sent out that sell alert. But the challenge was that there was so much supply on the market at the time that it really was a break even. Like I don't think anybody really made money on that card. I think everybody kind of broke even. So with Holiday though, he's a bigger name. And so I'm more confident in auctions on Holiday. I'll say this. And I said this on the Sports Card Strategy Show about a month ago, but I put all of my Jackson Holiday cards in eBay drafts about a month ago because I didn't want to miss an important announcement or an important performance of Jackson Holiday in spring training. And so I held them in the eBay drafts through the point we talked about where we didn't send out a sell alert on Holiday because he didn't make the Orioles. And so last night, when I saw the news that he was going to be, you know, CBSSports.com and other reliable sources had articles about the Orioles were calling him up, I went ahead and just went live. And it was like 7 p.m. Eastern time when I saw the news. And I think I was going out to have drinks with my parents because they were in from out of town. And again, I say this all the time, and I'm not kidding. Like, I just opened up the eBay app in my phone and just went, list it on all 5 of my Holiday drafts. Cause I knew it's like 7 PM Eastern time. That's right in the pocket. It's a Tuesday night. I don't care. This is a 10 day auction. It's going to end on a Friday. you know, whatever, Thursday or Friday or whatever. I'm not looking at the calendar right now. It's something like that.
Friday.
I'm going to get the hype of the call-up announcement, and then I'm going to get likely through his big league debut, and it's going to end, and then I'm going to move the card. And I just have to do it. I think people have a fear of moving it because I think people have a fear of being underwater on a card. And if you have a fear of being underwater on a card, like, you got to play the game more. You got to get over that fear. You got to play the game more. You got to put more reps in because, yes, you're going to be underwater on some cards. But if you play the game more and you play it the way that we play it, and we help you play it at sportscardschool.com and at nooffseason.com and the Sports Card Strategy Show, you're definitely going to be up at the end of the quarter, at the end of the year, et cetera, right? So here's the breaking news from my end. 9 days, 7 hours left in an auction of the 2022 Bowman Chrome Draft Jackson Holliday first rookie. It says rookie, but first prospect auto PSA 9. Opening bid $299. 18 watchers, one bid. 9 days, 7 hours left. I'm feeling really good about that one. The 2022 Bowman Draft Jackson Holliday first prospect chrome PSA 10 base, 11 watchers, four bids, 9 days, 7 hours left. Opening bid $59, or current bid $59. I think my opening bid was $49. The refractor version of that, six watchers, two bids. The opening bid was $99. That's at $103.50. These are all with 9 days and 7 hours left. The Sapphire Edition base PSA 10 has four watchers, does not have a bid yet, $199 starting bid. So what I've done there, Connor, because everyone's probably wondering, how do you get these starting bids? The starting bids are basically like 60% of what I bought into the card for ish, 60 to 80% of what I bought into the card for ish. So basically what I'm doing with this art form of listing and auctions is I'm kind of saying, okay, how much am I into the card for? Is it a buy it now or best offer? Either way, I got a, is it a buy it now or best offer or auction? Either way, I got a list at a selling marker. Like, I have to do it, but I just have to, but if I list in a buy it now or best offer, I'm giving myself more upside and less downside, but I'm risking not moving the card at the selling marker, which is kind of a big deal. If I go in the auction, I'm going to move the card. I'm going to pit people up against each other. If I've done it the right way, I've bought in at a price where I'm going to profit. I don't know how much I'm going to profit, but I'm going to roll the dice and do it. And I'm going to move the card. The risk is that I don't profit as much as I thought and that I break even. That's probably the worst case scenario. But the best case scenario is things pan out the way I thought they would. And I actually profit like 50%, 100% on the card. So, and I'm setting my opening bids at a point where I feel like I'm mitigating a little risk because I'm not going to totally get crushed if it doesn't sell for what I thought it was going to sell for. And if I want to adjust the bid, the opening bid amount, you can do that as long as the item has no bids. So you can always go down or up on an opening bid amount. But I think it makes more sense on someone like Jackson Holliday because he's so hyped and he was the number one prospect, to start higher and then maybe adjust down if you need to, if your item's not moving and you decide you want to move it later on in the auction. You'll get bids. People are enticed by the price. So I'm deterring people from that Sapphire Edition at that $199 opening bid. But I'm like $300 and some into that card. And so that's where it's like that 60 to 66% opening bid for that.
I love it. Yeah. And I think if you're a listener and you've been listening to a lot of our content and you're trying to poke holes, the argument might be made that we try to not wait for any player performance spikes to be the reason that we need someone to go up, and vice versa. If they play poorly, we don't want that to be the reason they go down. So people might be thinking, why are you listing in an auction that could last 10 days? What if Jackson Holliday makes the bigs and does awful? Here's my thought there, Paul. If you look at the schedule for the Orioles, the only day that they don't play until, let's see, April 25th, the only day that they do not play is April 18th. So I don't know that if you do a 10-day auction, by the way, it will end on a Saturday. It's going to end against, looks like, the Royals at 6 o'clock. So probably primetime ending position. I know the Royals, not the most popular team in the world. But Saturday, people probably sitting at home, people not working, relaxing, like Paul's saying, making buying decisions, ending at a primetime hour, 6 o'clock in the evening, if you have it ending at the game, whatever it may be. But you've got so many games in a 10-day period for that auction where people aren't going to freak out if Jackson Holliday has a couple bad games off the rip, and you give yourself time for if he does have a couple good games, those bids can really go crazy then. You know, so you've got a 10-day window where I don't think people are going to give up on a prospect that's just been called to the big. So I don't think it's a concern in terms of, like, if he comes out and doesn't play fantastic. I think, if anything, having the 10-day just gives you a chance to get an even bigger boost if he does play well. Whereas if you have a buy it now that goes first night on a high-end card, or if you have a buy it now on a low-end card, it kind of closes off your window to being open for the positives that could come from that. Curious what you think about that.
You're exactly right. I'm so glad you brought that up, because what people, I think, sometimes worry about is, what, like you said, what if he underperforms? But I think what people are missing is that he's in the news cycle so much. Like, everyone's going to be covering the fact that he's the number one prospect. He's with the Orioles. They've called him up. He's making his major league debut. And to your point, he's got a dick ton of games in this 10-day window. So even if he strikes out every single at bat for his first three games, he's still in the news cycle. It's still like Jackson Holliday watch, you know, on MLB Network. And like, it's going to be always more beneficial to be listing these cards in auctions when these guys are at their peak news cycle, you know, time period. So I think that it is a roll of the dice. I mean, if he whiffs and doesn't make any contact with the ball and makes errors in the middle infield for the entire 10-day period, I think the worst case scenario is that your buyer doesn't pay, you know, to be honest with you. I think, and then in that case, it's like, well, what did you lose there? I mean, you still got the card. Nobody promised you that he was going to Ellie De La Cruz, you know, mash in his first 10 MLB games. So, I mean, you get the upside of that potential, but I think your floor is actually much higher than what you think it is, because you're relating it to a time period where he wasn't in the news at all. And now he's in the news every single day and it's a big deal. And even though it's only a month later than the Jackson Churio, Jackson Merrill sell alerts and that kind of thing, Wyatt Langford, the guys that broke camp with the big league clubs, it's still his own news cycle after Caitlin Clark's stuff, after the NCAA tournament, it's now over. So I think this actually played out really well for Jackson Holliday. And I think you nailed it in terms of like what the 10-day auction actually is. And what you're doing is you're listing at a time when he has a lot of opportunities. He has a lot of, pardon the pun, he has a lot of at-bats, you know, like pun included, I guess, you know, pun intended, I guess, is like, he's got a lot of at-bats. So, but I mean, you could say that with the same thing where you're listing a quarterback at a point where he's starting two games in a 7-day period in a 7-day auction. You know, you're giving yourself more at bats for that quarterback, more snaps in that case, right? So I think you want to do that. And you know, there's a couple great nooffseason.com family members in the live chat right now, just kind of talking about our community and how great it is and the knowledge that we put out there. And I think the sentiment is there a danger in us all doing the same thing at the same time? And I to that, I would say, I don't know, but I would say this, like eBay, just eBay alone, like not even including PWCC, ComC, all the other places that you can be selling your sports cards. My slabs, just eBay alone, guys, has like, 7-8 figures of listings like on a daily, weekly basis for players like Jackson Holliday. So as much as I want to believe that we have this massive community that can impact the overall sports card market, I mean, looking at the numbers, which Connor and I do all the time, when you look at the numbers of that, I mean, my answer to you guys would all be this. When you look at the numbers, we're like barely 0.0000001 of the entire sports card market. It's that massive. There are so many people who haven't even found us yet. And if we're all doing this and growing, I still don't even think we're impacting the market, especially for a guy like Jackson Holiday. You know, I mean, you could maybe argue that the listeners of the Sports Card Strategy Show are the only people that are out there really buying Carson Beck. Or, you know, I don't even think you could say that about Shedeur Sanders. As much as I talk about Shedeur Sanders, there's no way that we're really, you know, impacting his overall card market. Connor, what do you think about that? Am I wrong?
No, I think you're right. I mean, if even just looking at the information that I provided today for Jackson Holiday, one player, an MLB prospect who's not yet a star, and let's think about the overall sales that are happening. Jackson Holiday in 14 days by himself has sold 1,400 times. 1,400. That's one singular player, and that's tracked by Market Mover, so there could be more sales there. But I don't think that's a concern. You know, I mean, maybe one day that we're at the point where we're creating that saturation or whatever it may be. But I think that it's easy to kind of coincide results with potentially thoughts in terms of why they've been produced. But I don't know that we're necessarily the ones that are creating those direct results in terms of pricing.
Yeah. And we're just reverse engineering the fact that the sports card hobby going back, I don't know, maybe 100 years, has always really been more interested in buying into a player when they're relevant in the news cycle. Like we're not changing the market. I would never start a business and put my entire family's livelihood into a business where I'd be silly enough to think that I could actually change or significantly impact the market. You have to go with the market. So the way that we help you guys make money is by reverse engineering what the market does. And we know what the market does is they buy cards when players are highlighted in the news cycle. And so we look to anticipate when that is going to for sure happen for top guys. And those selling markers are locked in stone, like they're for sure going to happen, like the beginning of a season or a call up or a promotion from a backup to a starter or, you know, an all-star break or, you know, different things like that, that are the selling markers. And then we just go where they ain't on the front end, which is the buy-in. Right. So, thanks for the thoughts in the live chat, everybody. But I think it's nice. It's a nice sentiment to say like, hey, you know, we're big, we got a big family, like we're all doing the same thing. Are we competing against each other? I mean, I would probably say, you know, people in the hobby since, let's just go back to 2012. Like I consider 2012 through the present to kind of be like the modern cards, because that's when you got Prism. You know, you had Topps Chrome stuff. You know, so when you go like the guys that are playing right now and you go back, you could find most of them going all the way back to 2012 in a rookie card. So I kind of consider like 2012 to be kind of that cutoff between something that's like a little bit more, not necessarily ultra modern, and something that's like, you know, modern, right? All the way up to present, which is like ultra modern. And so I think that when you talk to people who have gone all the way back to 2012 or even 2015 or even 2019, like people that have been in the hobby since 2019 are actually kind of dinosaurs right now. And so like, that's great. Like with respect, dinosaurs. But I think that they would all tell you that, you know, you're in a situation where you're basically like, you know, the market is kind of established to the point where it does what it does. It's always done this and it's always going to do this. And so those people will probably give you a lot of examples where they've been like, look, I've listed more than one of the same card at the same time. And that's like something you need to, I think that's a more relevant question. What do you do when you have more than one of the same card at a sell alert? You know, I think that's the question you guys should be asking us is like, what do I do? You're like, how do I not compete against my own two listings? Right. So that's kind of something I'll just answer right now with my Jackson Holiday listings or other. I got a Caleb Williams listings coming up that are the same card, you know, and I want to move them. And so what am I doing? I'm just staggering them by about 24 to 48 hours so that they end still at the same time of day, strategically. But they're not actually really competing against each other, because really when it boils down to eBay auctions, like people competing against each other in eBay auctions are really kind of down to the same, like maybe 5 or 6, 7 hour period of time. And so that's another art form that I'm trying to, I guess, master. That's hard. So I would say, like, consider your own personal scenario more than you worry about, what we're all doing together in the nooffseason.com fam. I think we're all going to be fine.
Totally agree. Paul, I know we need to move along. I do want to ask one more question on Jackson Holiday. Just from reading the article, I was trying to get as much information as I could from it. And one thing I read was this. It says, by calling up Holiday within the first 2 weeks of the season, the Baltimore Orioles can reap an extra first round draft pick through the Prospect Promotion Incentive, which awards teams with top prospects who attain a full year of service time and win the Rookie of the Year award. While there are 187 days on the baseball calendar, a full year of service is achieved at 172 days, which Holiday will reach if he remains with Baltimore for the remainder of the season. So when I read this, I don't know how much Baltimore is going to care about making sure they get that the benefit from the prospect promotion incentive. But it makes me think that Holiday is likely going to get plenty of track run this season in terms of how long the leash is, even if he doesn't perform well. However, if he doesn't perform well and it's real bad and they do send him back down, Paul, how quickly does prospect fatigue sit in for sports card flippers? And does he get to another point where it's like, we should buy him again because he's going to get called back up? Or is this just a one-time thing? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, like, somebody in the live chat just asked about Junior Caminero or Paul Skeens, and Caminero's already been called up, and then, you know, and then he, I guess, went back down and got called up again or might get called up again or whatever. And so it definitely could happen to Holiday. I mean, it happened to Jared Kelenic, former number one overall pick. So it could definitely happen to Jackson Holiday, and it could happen for the reason that you stated with the service time, or it could happen just because he doesn't perform well or whatever. And that's why I like to just kind of move out of it. You know, I like to move out of it and move on. I think that baseball prospecting has gotten a reputation of being super risky. And that's because people don't think like we think in the nooffseason.com fam. Nooffseason.com family members, and welcome in new listeners. We love having you here, and we want you to stay as part of the fam. We think, like, look, this is a play based on our guidelines and strategies, and we're going to make this play and move on. That's not risky. What's risky is holding someone like Jackson Holiday far beyond the call-up and thinking that he might be the next Ronald Acuna, the Juan Soto. And I use those guys because you look at those guys, Bowman Chrome first prospect autos in high grades, and you're like, oh man, like, look at the upside of that. Like, we don't want you to do that, because those are going to be few and far between where it continues to rise and rise like a Hall of Famer. We don't want to bank on these guys becoming Hall of Famers. So I think, like, to your point, Connor, like, the takeaway is, like, you gotta move on from this. You can't be in a situation where you're, even if you're in that buy it now or best offer with that four-figure card that we talked about at the beginning of the segment, I still think you're ripping it down if it doesn't move, and you're hoping that he performs well, and then you're listing it in an auction so that you can move on from that, because it could go from a four-figure card down to a low three-figure card and only be dangling at a low. I mean, it could lose 90% of its value in the next year if Jackson Holiday pulls a Kelenic or a Torkelson, like how those guys debuted in their first year. So I think you got to move on. And that's why baseball card prospecting gets that risky stigma, the stigma of being risky. It's not risky if you move in and out of it like we do.
Yep, well put there, I think. Jackson Holiday finally called up. Be stay tuned for the sell alert. Again, that's sports cards at 1-833-992-5727. There, moving along, Paul, we mentioned at the head of the show, it is officially Masters week. We're at Wednesday now. Tomorrow's going to be opening rounds. We did want to touch on some Master stuff and have a little bit of discussion. Shout out to our guy, Michael Kusta of Fondling Cardboard. kind of emailed us, reached out to us with some good perspectives. Always have good conversation when he reaches out. Fantastic creator in the hobby. But let's talk about some top names, Paul. Let's talk about, you know, what the Masters means for us in general. Like I mentioned, it's arguably my favorite weekend of the year. And with the increased drama between kind of PGA and LIV over the last couple of years, it's always interesting to see how the two sides get along and compete. So let's talk about some top names. We got Rory McIlroy, John Rahm, Will Zalatoris, Victor Hovland, Cam Smith, JT, Justin Thomas. We got Patrick Cantlay, Colin Morikawa, Dustin Johnson from LIV, Tony Finau, Brian Harman, Shane Lowry, Max Homa, Cam Young, Jason Day, Matt Fitzpatrick. All these guys have had, most of them have cards that you can invest in. So it's worth their time to kind of pay attention to what their prices do, depending on how they play, especially if you're holding them, obviously. And then a lot of these guys have played well over the last couple of years, won big tournaments at different times and can contend in this. Obviously, there's more names than this, but we did want to touch on them. Paul, I think the question is really, is Masters hype itself enough for a selling marker? You know, we said no several weeks ago when we talked about it and mentioned that you'd likely need a player performance spike from Masters finishes to produce profits. And that was based on historical data of top finishers from last year. And we noted that even then you could be risking it. You know, I still feel the same way. I think you need to catch lightning in a bottle in terms of trying to invest in golf prints, hoping to make profits during the Masters. Market Movers doesn't even have a market pulse index for golf because it's so small in terms of demand and movements. So I wanted to get a general feel of kind of where the market was at right now. It's a little bit difficult unless you go on a card by card basis. But I mean, you look at Tiger Woods, Paul, I think the interesting one for us is like, we want to, if we're testing theories, we're probably going to test someone that we think will move the most from the hype, right? And it would have been Tiger, in my opinion, because obviously it's Tiger. He's down 15% over the last 14 days and he is playing in the Masters, right? So I don't know necessarily if that's a reflection of Tiger's, you know, WDs, the withdrawals that he's had from a lot of recent tournaments that he's participated in. What do all these WDs mean for Tiger's card market? Do we need to avoid investing in Tiger for tournament hype purposes? Like I mentioned, he's down 15% over the last 14 days, but he didn't move the needle or the Masters didn't move the needle for Tiger, I should say, in terms of the hype spike. So curious what you think here. I think it's kind of got to be a fade in terms of a sports card strategy, but I'm excited to get your thoughts.
Tiger specifically is a tough one because he's got so much name recognition that, you know, it's hard to find like a sleeper in there with Tiger, but and it's also hard to like say the Masters is a sell marker, right? Because in order to make profit, you would have really had to have gotten a great deal on say his 2001 Upper Deck base PSA 10, like card number one, which I know Lefty likes that card. But so I think Tiger's a tricky one. I know, you know, Tiger has some amazing autos and low serial numbered cards. He's got some amazing inserts in a lot of different sets. He's obviously a guy that out of all of these players has like the most cards and the most variations of cards. And so I think that all of those things make it hard to make money on Tiger. I think that if you have Tiger Woods cards and you just want to move on from them at maybe a point of relevancy that could get you back a maximum amount in your bankroll, then this is a good week to do it because, you know, he's certainly going to be relevant. If not on the course, then just because it is the Masters and Tiger is Tiger and his history at the Masters. So whether or not he's in the field or if he does something in the field or any of that stuff, I think it's like a good week in general if under that context to move out of Tiger Woods cards. But at the risk of making our friend Mike Lacusta, the golf card collector on Instagram and host of Fondling Cardboard, cringe, I will add that like Tiger also probably is the most relevant long-term GOAT maybe in all of sports cards because he's like far and away the best at his sport. And so he's on the same token. It's like, he's a tough one because he's probably also the best hold out of anyone. So you really have to look at your own individual scenario as it relates to Tiger. I think it's a tough one. I think that the Tiger market is always going to be strong, meaning like you're always going to be able to find a buyer for your Tiger Woods collection. But are you going to make money on Tiger? I think that's where it's really challenging. Now, to the other guys that Mike fed us, I think those are some great names. And some of them have some amazing cards, right? Like I know Morikawa and McIlroy, I've looked at their upper deck autos and, you know, not all brands, but a lot of the upper deck brands for those guys are great options. And so, I'm intrigued because like if Rory, for example, wins the Masters, like you could see like that could become like the biggest news in sports cards for Sunday and Monday, you know, like next Sunday, Monday, this Sunday, next Monday, Tuesday, etc. You could be seeing like record-breaking sales for golf cards for sure, not necessarily from a dollar amount standpoint, but from a profit amount standpoint. Because Rory's just got that big name, and it's almost like we've all got blue balls for Rory to like win a major, right? So if Rory wins a major, it's like it's time for everybody to get excited, and probably you're gonna see some big sales of his cards. I would say Morikawa would maybe be the next guy, even though he hasn't been as relevant as Rory has. I think Full Swing has given a lot of these guys a bit more juice in the card market, like Matt Fitzpatrick, for example. I mean, being featured on Full Swing with his brother Alex a couple years in a row. He won the US Open last year. And so, you know, if Matt Fitzpatrick wins and he's got some nice cards, you could see a spike there. Obviously, JT is a big name. DJ is a big name. I know that, you know, Rahm, I've listed my Rahm and Scheffler SI for kids cards. Rahm's really only card is the 2019 SI for kids card rookie. And Scheffler's only card, sadly, is the 2017 SI for kids rookie. So I know Mike and I and a lot of golf card collectors out there and Shane Graham's into golf cards. I know you got Skeeter Robinson in the nooffseason.com fams into golf cards. So I think a lot of us are excited about like more ROM cards coming with Prism, Live Prism and that deal. But sadly Scheffler, I mean, that could be his only card, but I'm moving out of my, like I've listed my Scheffler and my ROM. I think the Masters is a good selling marker. We've talked about it before. So again, depending on your scenario, you could move out of your Tiger. You could keep your Tiger, depending on what you wanted to do from the beginning with that card and when you bought into it. But I think, you know, I think the golf card market is on the up and up, and I think the Masters is one of the most exciting times. So shout out to Mike Lacusta. Check him out at the golf card collector on Instagram and Fondling Cardboard on Instagram. Good friend of the show. So and good stuff, Connor. Appreciate that.
Real quick, I did want to touch on, I think you hit the nail on the head in terms of the Rory, in terms of guys that will benefit the most from the profit spike or from performance spikes. I think you're right. You know, I was mentioning in the beginning of the conversation that like the guys that will move will be the guys that perform well, obviously, which is not necessarily something that I want to be going out prior to the tournament and specifically investing in hopes of that. But the guys that have the kind of that lore around them would be the guys that could explode in the market. You know, you mentioned Rory. It's been 10 years now since he won his last major. If he wins at Augusta, he competes the Grand Slam or completes the Grand Slam, things like that. So I think that, and just a quick note, I think that the guys will have to be probably top end names that are easily identifiable to really explode there. But a lot of good stuff. Shout out Michael Kusta, and thanks for the information there, Paul. Let's roll into the final segment of today, which I'm very excited for. We've been in the lab. Definitely been in the lab. So we're going to roll through now top five sports card opportunities to buy a card pre-graded and flip. Paul Sports Card Strategy Show on a Monday shared the formula with you all and identified how it can help us make data-driven decisions without going in blind. Gives us a return on investment probability tracker and tells us where we should really be focusing our attention. Today's list is exciting for me, Paul, because per usual, we're always looking for new ways to make money. That means staying willing to be liquid with our standards in relation to the right card and right players. Our data now allows us to establish which exact cards make sense to invest in. And today's top five highlights some of the best options from our recent findings in terms of pre-graded cards. And they're definitely not, Paul, what you would expect for us. So I'm excited to go ahead and jump right into things, starting with number five, going with George Pickens. It's his 2022 Prism Silver PSA 10. Paul, we don't often pitch skill position guys without using the term flyer play. This is an interesting one that I feel like we would typically fade in terms of like a staple or a top five graded card to buy. If you look at Pickens 2022 Prism Silver, it's got a pop count of 115. is currently trading around $70 after sitting between $110 and $200 for August and September of 2023. You would need to collect 13 of these cards and sell at a price of just $130 to be able to profit $500. Now, obviously, collecting 13 could be slightly difficult with a pop count of just 115, but that's kind of the metric that we're using as we roll through this list. How many cards would we need to produce $500 of net profit? And these are conservative numbers, guys. We're not being aggressive with these numbers. We're making sure that we're factoring in fees. We're factoring in everything there. So first pick is George Pickens, 2022 Prism Silver. And Paul, I want you to kind of touch on why, or like the criteria that we're looking to find some of these undervalued prints in relation to their floors, and why we think they're exciting buys right now based on their specific price.
Yeah, this is the most excited I've ever been. And I've been doing this show for 4 years now, and this is the most excited I've ever been. And it's because of the formula. And I don't want to overcomplicate things, Connor. The formula, like you said, is just simply a way to narrow our focus. And that's what I talked about Monday, is we're taking the same principles that we've always had that we've built here at nooffseason.com, which are going where they ain't, having a selling marker, buying the right cards for the right players at the right time, moving in and out strategically. But there's so many freaking cards, and we want to make sure that we narrow our focus and that we don't miss opportunities. So by being able to have this formula, it basically allows us to just run as many cards as possible through it using our process, and then say, oh my gosh, like we've been missing better ways to make money. Like, we know how to help you make money flipping sports cards, but the formula ensures that we put ourselves all in a position in the nooffseason.com fam to prioritize and make money more efficiently and have more fun, because George Pickens, you're right. I never would have even looked at a George Pickens 2022 Prism Silver PSA 10 or a Prism Silver Raw or whatever. But today's show is the top five cards to buy graded and flip. So we're talking, like, I just never would have even thought to, like, even seeing it at a card show, I would have been like, oh, like George Pickens Prism Silver PSA 10, that's cool. But like, I probably would have had so many other things in my brain that I wouldn't have even stopped to think that this could be an opportunity. And to your point, you know, if you want to make, you know, the thing about the formula is it lets you just say, like, I want to make X amount, and it doesn't really matter what that amount is, but let's just say arbitrarily, like, I want to make $500 flipping George Pickens cards. I just need to buy 13 of this Prism Silver, and it's a pop 115. So it's conceivable. It's conceivable that you could get 13 of these, and I just need to buy them at the current market rate. And conservatively, to your point, Connor, we've built into the formula a lot of metrics and levers to ensure that we're being conservative. And I only need 13 of these, and I only need to spend $868 to make $500. So that's a 58% ROI, you know, on that Pickens. And so, I mean, that's, I don't know. I want to say easy money, but it gives you a focus area to say, look, you know, why would I go, like, maybe at first glance, the Joe Burrow 2020 Prism Base 307 PSA 10 is like a card that you would gravitate towards, right? Because it's Joe Burrow, or the Brock Purdy 2022 Prism Base you would gravitate towards. But the formula tells us, Connor, that if we want to make $500 on the Burrow, we've got to spend $2,000, and we're only making 25%. And if we want to make $500 on the Purdy, we've got to spend $9,000 to make $500 on the Purdy. So that's what the formula brings to us at a basic level. I'm pumped. So yeah, George Pickens number five. Let's keep going here.
And I do want to note for the formula, if some of you are wondering where did that 130 number that they need to get to kind of come from, we're using historical data and, like I mentioned, conservatively picking a number that the card would trade at during a specific point in time. So in this scenario, Paul's picking kind of towards the end or the beginning of the NFL season, where Pickens sold last year. So we just look for conservative numbers that we believe give us plenty of space to move in the right direction, assuming that the card continues to trade where it should be trading. So moving along to number four, We're going to my guy, Darius Garland. Guys, I've been talking about him for a long time. And the data gave me some good news. So this is the beloved Prism Silver yet again. 2019 Prism Silver PSA 10, pop count 1606 from Darius Garland, currently trading for less than $60. You would need to collect just 15 of these, which I believe is a very attainable number considering that pop count of over 1600 to $2,500 profit, assuming this card jumps back to its baseline price of about $115 that we've seen it trade at consistently over the last year. Paul, we also have the sell marker of the NBA playoffs coming up, where we should see some natural hype increase the pricing of this card. Just another card where it just, we found items that are trading at a discount that we believe are undervalued coincidentally, meaning that they haven't done something where, whether it's poor play or something off the field, to really decrease the value of these cards. So we're finding opportunities that are discounted that should be getting back to a point of homeostasis, is what I'm going to call it. Their living price point where they're frequently at. Really like this DG card, of course.
Yeah, like I was kind of yawning at this DG card earlier on in the basketball season because I was wondering, like, as good as Darius Garland is and as much as I love him as a basketball player, like, is the card market ever going to really respond to him? And then to your point, like, you just go back and you're like, well, wait a minute, like, this card does sell for $115 conservatively in October. Like, historical data tells us that. And so the buy-in point for this card right now around $58. So, you know, the formula works in straightforward ways, Connor. It does not work in mysterious ways. It's very straightforward. It just simply tells us that this is an opportunity, to your point, to simply just buy at a point where it's a low point, and that there is a, you know, the other side to this that you mentioned that's important is that there is something that does, nothing special has to occur for this card to sell at 115. That's the key thing too. So it's down, but nothing special has to occur. It's not down because Darius Garland pulled a Josh Giddey or a Wander Franco. It's down for some other reason. And it's likely to go back up again just because historical trends. And so 58% ROI, you know, you spend $853 to make 500. That's outstanding. You need 15 of a pop 1600 card. Very conceivable that you could do that. You know, again, you're probably not going to be able to buy all 15 of them at $58. But I think if you can get around that $58 mark, again, you're looking at a 59% ROI. So you've got some room to play with there in this conservative model. So I love DG, and I think the formula loves DG, right? Because there's another DG card coming up here.
Yeah, the formula does love DG. Before we get to his next card, I wanted to have a quick conversation, Paul. In the last couple of months, a lot of times when we pick, whether it be flyer plays or singular cards to buy and throw in submissions, I know we're talking about pre-graded prints here, but you've talked about kind of stacking our different options together. For investors that are listening to us talking about which pre-graded prints to buy, do you recommend trying to stack these options together or literally doing what we're saying, where it's like, you can go buy 15 of these Prism Silvers, it's a pop count 1600, you should do that? What are your thoughts?
Are you saying that you should go buy, like, are you asking, like, am I recommending that somebody go out and buy 14 or 15 of this particular card, or simply buy however many they can get at that price, knowing that they're going to have that same projected ROI, versus, like, you know, and kind of like mixing things together? Is the question, like, am I mixing things together from the formula, or am I going kind of all in on one of the top cards? Is that what you're
exactly
asking?
Exactly. It's like, are people buying each of the options today? For example, we have five picks today. Are they buying three of each card, or are they buying 15 DG Prism Silvers?
I think that's the fun of it, is that, like, you could buy 15 DG Prism Silvers, or you can, I think, so the real answer, though, there is an actual real answer. So I'm going to give it to you. It's simply, only buy what you can get at the buy-in point. Because if you don't get it at the buy-in point, then the formula blows up in your face. The formula only works when you get the card at the buy-in point. And the buy-in point, just to be very straightforward on this, is just the most, it's really just the, like, the average of the most recent sales comp. You know, it's like making sure that there's not an outlier sale, and it's saying most recent valid sales comp or average of most recent sales comps. So it's not complicated. There's nothing complicated about this. It's just that we're putting in a lot of extra time to help prioritize and help weed out options that with one of the criteria might look good, but when you put all the criteria together, they're not the best. And we're putting as many cards through the formula to really just make our recommendations at nooffseason.com that much more powerful.
Love that answer. Absolutely love it. Let's go to number three now. Sticking with Darius Garland, as we mentioned, his 2019 Optic Holo, number 195 in PSA 10. This one's a pop of just 364. His Optic Holo does cost just $30 right now. And in theory, if you could collect 28 of these, you could make $500 in profits. If this card jumps to just $60, which is what it was trading at regularly between May and October of last year. With the NBA playoffs coming up, Paul, like I mentioned, you could have a clear marker to see the card jump. We're going to have increased television time. We're going to have increased media hype. A good performance could really do a lot here. Like this card, and for just $30, Paul, this is another great option.
Yeah, and you just made me think of something, too, that we probably need to reiterate, which is, like, for these graded to flip, you do need the selling marker. You do need to know what the selling marker is, and you do need to know that the projected average sale price is based similarly on that upcoming. So it's based on a historical version of the upcoming selling marker, essentially. So you articulated that well. I just needed to, like, bring that point home to the audience that, like, this is what these graded plays are based on versus the raw to grade, which is different. We talked about that Monday. Well, you know, every Monday we'll go through raw to grades. Every Wednesday we'll go through graded options. So this one's a little bit trickier, though, because while it's a 60% ROI, it is only a pop 364 card. So you need 28 of them, but you do have a more limited supply of them. So on one hand, it's a little bit better option. On the other hand, it's probably going to be harder to find these. The buy-in point is half of what the buy-in point is of the Prism Silver. So again, you know, the Optic Holo and the Prism Silver rookies in PSA 10 typically are, you know, that's typically the pattern where the Prism Silver is going to be a higher buy-in point than the Optic Holo. But in this case, you can see that the Optic Holo is actually the better card to buy into. It actually, even though it costs less and is going to sell for less, it actually has the higher quote unquote upside per the formula, just based on the fact that it's got a 60% ROI versus a 58.6% ROI, which is also pretty good. These cards are pretty much neck and neck at the 4 and 3 spot.
Yep. DG coming in twice on the top five list. Up next, we're going to slide over to the number two spot with a skill position player. Typically, we wouldn't invest in skill position running backs that have shorter timelines in the NFL. However, the formula tells us we should be looking in this area. We look at Najee Harris. His 2021 Optic Holo is going for just $15 right now in PSA 10 after historically trading between $30 and $50 during the NFL season. Najee's card needs to go back to just $40 for you to get a 113% return on investment. Now, with it being just a pop 86, this number sounds difficult to attain, but you need to collect 29 of these and invest $441 to make $500. So you need to own 34% of the market to make $500, but the $500 is an arbitrary number. This is still a fantastic opportunity here, Paul. Trading extremely cheap with high upside and interesting data that tells us that this card is just undervalued right now.
Yeah, with full access to the formula, which only you and I have in the world right now, and TBD on what's going to happen with that, because some of you are asking in the live chat, and I appreciate that. The arbitrary number that Connor's talking about is, like, what's your total profit goal? So really, you could put $500, you could put $50, you could put $5,000, $50,000, $1,000, $1 million. It wouldn't change the takeaway here. Like, it would, that number is just how much money do you want to make on this card? And at some point, you know, if you're trying to make based on an 86 pop count card, you know, you could type $1 million in here. It's obviously going to be impossible because you would need, you know, I don't know. Let's do it right now. Like, you would need 6,000 of this card to make $1 million, but there's only 86. So we put in 500 in here and you need 29 of them. So to your point, yeah, you could get this, but it's going to be hard to do. But what I like about it is, it's one of the most profitable cards because you're going to make 113% just simply by buying in now and then selling in August. And so why would I sit here and tell you to only buy NFL quarterbacks? Why would I sit here and tell you to only buy Carson Beck, who's the top college quarterback? Why would I sit here and tell you to only buy Anthony Edwards or only buy Giannis or only buy Tiger Woods or only buy, you know, Carlos Alcaraz or the number one player in every sport? Go to Najee Harris. The other thing I like about Najee Harris, oh, by the way, is that I actually kind of like the Steelers going into the season. I think with Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, Najee Harris, George Pickens, who's also on this list, it's kind of coincidental that we've got two Steelers on this list. And I actually think that both of these guys would have been nice buys anyway. Now that the formula is reiterating this, I'm super high on Najee Harris. So thanks to the formula, thanks to Connor's work in the lab, throwing as many cards as possible into the formula to get us this amazing top five today. So I think if you haven't been shocked already by the fact that George Pickens, Darius Garland, and Najee Harris are in the top five cards to buy graded and flip, I think you might flip your lid for who's number one.
Definitely. And I, number one spot does not have the highest return of investment on this list. However, I wanted to put it at number one, Paul, because it's exciting for our listeners and exciting for us because it's opening a new door of opportunity in terms of places that we're willing to invest our money. So number one resides with a baseball player that has already been called up. Typically, would not recommend Jordan Walker's 2020 Bowman Chrome First BD 57 and PSA 10 as he has already been called up. But the formula is allowing us to identify new areas to invest in here. So we're like we've been mentioning, we're able to identify players that are trading at a discount relative to what I'm calling that homeostatic point, aka they're not trading where they should be and seemingly for no reason. Walker's 2020 Bowman Chrome First and PSA 10 is trading at around $25 after sitting between $50 and $60 and even higher prior over the last several months. Assuming Walker's prices jump back to just $45, you would need to invest just over $1,100 and collect 45 of these cards to turn a $500 profit, which is still a return of investment of 44%. This is a pop count 849, so an attainable card here. I'm excited, Paul, because this is opening the door to us investing in baseball players that have potentially already seen the call-up, something that we would not recommend doing just a couple of weeks ago. So curious to see how you're feeling about this new direction in terms of trying to find more investment opportunities for baseball players, and excited for listeners that are big time baseball fans that have been kind of waiting for us to scratch this itch.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I'm excited for those people as well, because I think that if I had to critique our show, I mean, I think the obvious thing is that we don't talk about current major leaguers very often. And we also don't talk about a lot of the prospects. We also don't talk as much about the skill position players in the NFL. We also struggle. We have historically struggled to come up with real good basketball investment opportunities. And so I think the formula really is helping us with all of that. And it's not changing anything that we do. We still have our current process to determine what cards get put into the formula, but it puts us in a position where we can look for different patterns to find more cards to put into the formula. And we're learning. And this Jordan Walker card was an example of just something simple where the buy-in point is so low. And the historical data of July or August for Jordan Walker is so much higher than the current buy-in point. And it's only $45. So it's $25 to get in. And it only has to go up to $45 for you to make 44% ROI on this card. So you would just need 45 of these cards spending just under $1,200 to make $500. That's pretty good. That's better, for example, then Ethan Salas's 2023 Bowman Chrome Prospects First PSA 10. Because that card you buy for 40 based on historical data of the call up for similar prospects, be it Adley Rutschman, be it Jackson Churio, similar prospects, $65 average sale price gets you 30% projected ROI. So you would need 42 Ethan Salas cards to make $500, you need to spend nearly $1,700 versus spending $500 less to make $500 for Jordan Walker. So I think there's a lot of people out there that are curious about the formula. I appreciate your questions. There's a lot of questions in the live chat about, do we get access to the formula? You know, what are you guys doing with the formula? How transparent are you being with the formula? Like, what's going on with this formula? And I think the punchline is just, we're still doing all the same things that we've always done, but we now have a statistical model to put as many cards in as possible, just to make sure A, we're not missing anything, and B, we prioritize where to put our money and where to recommend that you put your money, because things are not always what they seem. Justin Herbert 2020 Base Prism PSA 10 may seem like the safest way to make money, when in actuality, Devin Booker's 2015 Donruss Base PSA 10 will give you more than two times the amount of ROI. So more to come on the formula. Really, I will say this though. Phase one is using this data to talk about it on the Sports Card Strategy Show. Along with that phase one, 1B of the rollout phase of the formula is effective immediately. Connor and I are using the formula to further drive the sports card rankings at nooffseason.com and the recommendations made on the player profile pages. Next will be probably in a month or so, we will be able to add additional data to the player profile pages from the formula. So you will get to see the data that we see for each player on their player profile pages. What's to be determined is what access, if any, we actually give anyone outside of Connor and I and people at nooffseason.com access to the actual formula. But we'll be fully transparent about it. We'll tell you every element of it. And I think, you know, the best way to ask about it is to be a premium member at nooffseason.com. Get a free 30-day trial today. Ask questions on the Overflow Show, the premium pod every Friday. If you're really into this and you want to use it to drive more decisions, I mean, we're all about it. So go to nooffseason.com/ask. If you see a call to action to sign up, then take that call to action. If you see the form, that means you're already a member, and just go ahead and submit your question. Connor, great job today. Do you have anything else to add before I wrap up the show with the live chat love?
What I am going to say is that the database that we're creating that finds us information that's spit out at us from the formula is going to continue to grow. So each week we're going to have some new exciting opportunities to talk about a lot of different areas that we probably wouldn't typically recommend. So it's going to be an exciting couple months as we kind of transition into new options and finding new players and new right cards. So it's an exciting time right now at the Sports Card Strategy Show, and I'm excited for it to keep building.
Yeah, thanks everybody out there for your support. Hoosier Card Guy has a W of the week, picked up a 2018 Donruss Lamar Jackson PSA 10 for $81. Love that. Rocky Empire Sports Cards. L of the week month, I got hooked on collecting a rainbow. All right, there you go. Collecting. We love collectors, but you know, I guess you can end up spending quite a bit of money on that. I see. Sergeant Slabs, good to see you. Stupendous Shorts, my W of the week. I just picked up a clean Jordan Love Prism Laser rookie locally for $35. Good work. Keith Riordan, this is in response to the question of the day. I used to prefer raw. However, I have switched to graded the last 2 years. The reason is that I believe more collectors are cracking graded cards that come back as sevens, eights, and selling them raw. That's interesting. All right, just want to say hello to Eric Bergera, David T, Koa, Heatai, Eric Sorensen, Sports Card Professor one more time, Christopher Bell, Building Time Machine, David Bobo, Christopher Bell, I think I already said that, Peter Murray, hello to you. I already answered your question about access to the formula. Rusty Imigart one more time, and Heatai one more time. See a lot of questions in the live chat. That's awesome. If you want us to answer them on the show, drop a super chat, or better yet, go to nooffseason.com/ask and get a free 30-day trial, and we'll answer it on Fridays on the premium pod. All right, everybody. If you're ready to start grading your cards and you want to flip for profit, we recommend PSA. But a great alternative is CGC Cards. CGC Cards is the perfect place to slab your favorite sports cards. From their crystal clear holders to their affordable pricing, CGC Cards is the perfect stop for your grading needs. Go to cgccards.com to start grading today. If you want to click on one of the banner ads at nooffseason.com as a shortcut, that helps us all out too. CGC Cards is a great company. I personally think that CGC cards over the next 5 or 6 years is going to grow to the point where we are talking more about them as being a viable option on the secondary market for flipping purposes. In the meantime, great PC protection. Connor, I know you're pumped about the Masters. Anything else you want to add before I hit everybody with the outro?
Just excited to see Jordan Spieth go low at Augusta and be pumped for your show on Monday. And we'll be back with you guys on Wednesday.
All right, everybody. Can't wait to do it again. Have a great day. Thanks so much for being here with us on the Sports Card Strategy Show. To connect with us further, please subscribe to the YouTube channel at youtube.com/Paul Hickey. Please also give us a follow on Instagram at Sports Card Strategy and on X at No Off Season Card. We also have a Discord that you could join at sportscardstrategy.com. Everyone, I'm Paul Hickey. For the rest of us here at nooffseason.com, have a great day. We'll see you again soon.